Welcome to Mr. Biz Radio, biz talk for biz owners. If you're ready to stop faking the funk and take your business onward and upward, this show is for you. And now, here's Mr. Biz, Ken Wentworth.
All right, welcome to another episode of Mr. Biz Radio with me, Mr. Biz, Ken Wentworth. And we're going to dive into a topic today that we honestly, in the 7+ years we've been doing the show, we've wanted to talk about. We really never found someone that we thought could do it justice, to be honest with you. And the primary thing we want to talk about today is the gender pay gap. And more importantly, how do we narrow it? How do we close it? How do we eliminate it? Obviously, optimally. And we found the person that we think can really do it justice. We know can do it justice. And so we're looking forward to having our guest this week, Ms. Liz Elting, founder and CEO of the Elizabeth Elting Foundation. She is an entrepreneur, business leader, best-selling author, linguophile, philanthropist, feminist, and mother. After living, studying, and working in 5 countries across the globe, Liz founded TransPerfect out of an NYU dorm room. I'm sure she'll have some interesting stories about that. TransPerfect is the world's largest language solutions company with over $1.2 billion in revenue and offices in more than 100 cities worldwide. Liz has been recognized as a Now Woman of Power and Influence, an American Heart Association's Woman Changing the World awardee, and one of Forbes' richest self-made women every year since the list's inception. Liz, welcome to Mr. Biz Radio.
Thank you so much for having me here, Ken. I'm so excited to be with you.
Yeah, look, I've been looking forward to it. I know your PR company reached out and said, hey, you know, we've got someone here that you might want to talk to. I had actually talked to Molly about who could I talk to about this gender pay gap, right? She said, oh my gosh, I have someone to be perfect for this. And so I'm very thankful and grateful we got it all set up. Before we dive into all that though, Liz, tell us, you know, I touched on some of it in the introduction, but tell us a little bit about your entrepreneurial journey that you've had.
Sure. Thank you so much for asking. So as you said, I was fortunate to live in 5 countries by the time I was 21 and shortly after graduating from college, and I had studied 4 languages. And I absolutely loved languages, and I loved bridging barriers throughout the world and among people. So when I was 21 years old, landed in New York City and got a job in the translation industry. I thought, oh, how perfect. I can use my language skills and combine them with business. And I had always had a love for business. Since that time I was 10 years old, I had worked and I had many, many, many jobs from the time I was 10 on through high school, through college. And related to that, and the reason for that is largely I was taught by my parents that I needed to depend on no one but myself. I needed to be financially independent, meaning I would pay my own bills. I would take care of myself. I would not depend on my parents. I would not depend on a husband. I was in charge. So anyway, I ended up getting this job at a translation company when I was 21. Absolutely loved the industry. It was the greatest industry in the world, I thought. But I thought it could be done better. I was first in production there, and then I moved over to the sales side, and I learned the industry, and as I said, loved the industry. I then went back to school after 3 years at the company, and I got my MBA in finance and international business from NYU Business School. And the reason I got it in finance is I was very practical, and as I had said, I thought I was supposed to be financially independent. And so then what happened is shortly after graduating, I got a job in finance at the proprietary trading division of a French bank. And I quickly realized, oh my God, this is not for me. And the way I realized that were two ways. One is I walked in and I was the only woman in the place, and I experienced a lot of sexism. I did. And I get into that a little bit in my book, in chapter one of my book. I mean, everything from the men expecting me to be the person who answered the phone and got the supplies to just overall treatment. And then the bigger issue, though, because I thought maybe I can work somewhere else and change that, was my heart wasn't in it. I didn't love finance. I thought it was very dry. It was a lot of number crunching, data entry, paper pushing. But I loved the translation industry. So I ended up leaving that job after only 6 weeks and starting TransPerfect out of an NYU Business School dorm room. Because as I said, I knew I loved the industry, but I thought it could be done better. And that's what led me to create TransPerfect. And, you know, the last thing I'll say on that is I basically did it because, you know, I wanted to pursue my passion. I had an idea. I loved languages. I loved solving clients' problems. But the other piece of it is this. There were, at the time, 10,000 other translation companies out there. So I thought, if I'm going to do this, we have to do it differently and better. We have to be the biggest and the best. And that was the goal out of that NYU Business School dorm room. And I think that's a really important lesson. You know, don't confuse being an entrepreneur with being an inventor. You do not need to invent something entirely new to be wildly successful. It was about spoiling the client with quality, service, innovation, et cetera. And that's basically how I was able to accomplish, we were able to accomplish our goal.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, Liz. So what were those differentiating factors? So there's 10,000 competitors out there. You're the new person, the new kid on the block, so to speak. What are some of those things you did? And you said, oh my gosh, here's, you know, two or three things that we can do that I know are not being done as well as we can do them.
Yes, absolutely. And it definitely involved being the absolute highest quality provider and making sure we did everything we could not to make mistakes, making sure every document was translated, edited, proofread, and as error-free as possible. And then if we did make mistakes, make sure we didn't charge the client to fix them. It was our mistake. We were fixing them. That was one thing. Another was do it faster than the competition. Basically, if they needed a quote, we got back to them with the quote within 15 or 20 minutes. And then, of course, when they needed a project, rather than it taking a week to do 5 or 10 pages, we'd do it in 2 days if that's what they needed, being faster. And then offering any kind of deliverable, whether, you know, not just the two softwares that were available at the time in the 90s, WordPerfect and Microsoft Word, but any software, any deliverable, and then having offices in every major city around the world, having a local presence. And then finally, last thing, innovating, continually innovating, basically anticipating clients' needs before they knew they had them, and also speaking to the clients and figuring out what else did they want, what else did they need. So those are some of the key differentiators.
Interesting, interesting. We're running out of time in the segment here, Liz, but I got to ask you, especially since I know in your youth, you traveled a lot. I know as an adult, you've traveled a lot. I may have done a little cyber stalking and, you know, as preparation for the show. So I have to ask, being as well-traveled as you are, if you could live anywhere in the world, where would you live and why?
Oh, I love that question. And I am so fortunate. You know, as you said, I traveled a lot. I was able to live in Portugal when I was little. I moved to Toronto and lived there. Then I did my junior year of college in Spain and then lived in Venezuela after Spain. And that's such a great question. There are so many places I would want to visit and live, but I will tell you, because this kind of sums up at least how I felt at the time. And I don't know how much time we have. I don't want to mess this up. You cut me off when you need to. But basically, I was doing my junior year of college in Cordoba, Spain. And I had planned on going to Paris after to do my second semester, first semester in Cordoba, second in Paris. I was having such an amazing time in Cordoba. I basically called up mid-semester, canceled Paris, and ended up spending the rest of the year in Cordoba. So long answer, but I adore Spain. I love Spain so much, and I would go back to Spain if I could right now. And I like to say I chose Cordoba over Paris. I did it that year, and I tried to do it with my life, with being an entrepreneur, you know, the entrepreneurial route instead of the corporate route. So,
yeah, anyway. Amazing. Yeah, I've been fortunate enough to go to Spain, and we loved it as well. My wife loved it there as well. We're going to hit a break here, guys. We'll come back after the break to continue talking with Liz Elting, founder of Elizabeth Elting Foundation.
How would you like to have direct access to Mr. Biz to help you run your business more profitably and more efficiently? At MrBizSolutions.com, you get live access to not only Mr. Biz, but also several of his hand-picked and trusted business experts, each with 20-plus years of experience to help you optimally manage and grow your business. That's just the start of where Mr. Biz Solutions begins. Learn more at MrBizSolutions.com. That's MrBizSolutions.com.
Attention, Mr. Biz Nation. We have an exclusive offer just for you. Get lifetime access to scarcity countdown timers and logic links for only $69. Yes, you heard it right, only $69. These tools will add urgency to your email campaigns and website pages, helping you increase conversions, sales, and capture more leads. Don't miss this incredible opportunity. Visit GetPulseTools.com now and take your business to new heights.
Got a question for Mr. Biz you want answered on air? Email it to info@MrBizSolutions.com. Now, once again, here's Mr. Biz.
All right, welcome back to the show. And again, we're talking with Liz Elting this week. I want to talk, Liz, a little bit about your book. So not among all the other amazing things you've accomplished in your life, you're also a best-selling author, Dream Big and Win. Tell us what drove you to write that book and sort of what people will get out of that book.
Sure, absolutely. I wrote it because I wanted to create and write the book I wished I had had when I was starting off my career, when I was starting my company, and when I was running my company. So that's why I wrote it. And I like to think of it as kind of a beach read business book, kind of a faster read, an easier read, a more relatable, authentic, and vulnerable read. Because, that's the type of book I liked reading. I liked it then and I like it now. More of an autobiography or biography as opposed to do this, do that, do this. But what I did and what I learned based on what I did right and the many, many, many things I did wrong. So that's really why I wrote the book. And, it's been such a joy sharing my lessons, as I said, because it would have been helpful to have them along the way. And that's what I tried to do with the book.
So you talk about it, and I haven't read the whole thing. I skimmed it as I was preparing for the interview and everything. But so I know you mentioned sort of autobiographical. So there's a bunch of stories in there, great anecdotes, right, that sort of support a lot of the things you talk about in the book. But and I know you mentioned during the first segment as well, you know, sort of you're facing that sort of the boys club, so to speak. Tell us a little bit about that, not only in your career, but, you know, how you allude to that as well in the book.
Sure. And I definitely talk about that in the book. And I talk about how I started at the proprietary trading division of the French bank and realized that was a boys club. So I thought, boy, if I can't work and I don't want to work in this sandbox, I'll create my own. And that was largely the idea with our company, along with building the world's largest language solutions company. I wanted to create a wonderful environment and a terrific environment for women. But I did face issues with the boys club, whether it was in the very early days when I showed up at a meeting with my business partner, who was a man, people assumed he was the CEO and I was the assistant because there were two of us and that's just how it was going to be. And this was back in 1992 when we started. So back in the early to mid 90s, and people just assumed that. And that was challenging and difficult. And it was difficult to me because I was the one who had lived in five countries, studied four languages, and worked for 3 years in the industry, as I said earlier, whereas he didn't have that experience. He went straight from undergrad to business school, but people assumed that. So that wasn't good. And then along the way, I saw that many of our women were experiencing issues, sometimes inside our company and outside our company. And I thought, well, that's no good. That's not fair. And then I was too, as a leader, because people expected me to be different from my partner and different from the male leaders in that I had to, all the issues that we often say, right? When a man is strong and assertive, he's strong and assertive. When a woman is, she's difficult and she's bossy. So I experienced those issues. Those are some of the examples. And, and then of course, when I went through having my kids, it wasn't easy being a woman because back then, a good family leave policy wasn't as prevalent. And I had trouble creating that even at my own company. So there were issues. There were issues along the way. And, but I definitely encountered some. And then I saw that our women were encountering them. And then fortunately, a couple of our women came to me one day and they said, Liz, I know you care about women and certainly we do too. Why don't we have a women's club here at our company? And this was back in maybe 2010, before these women's groups or these women's clubs were as prevalent. And that was wonderful. And that was a start as well. But boy, there were certainly issues along the way, no question.
So I'm curious, Liz, did you experience any, I don't want to call backlash, it's probably too strong of a word, but were there any males that got sort of offended? Like, oh my gosh, what's this women's club thing? Like, why is there no men's club? Did you experience any of that sort of reverse?
Absolutely. And I think I still see it now, right? Men aren't always happy, but we absolutely need these groups because we know what's happened. I mean, it was when I was alive, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, when maybe a number of our listeners were not, but I was. I mean, women couldn't even get a credit card without their husband's permission. And then in the 90s, when I started, we had almost no women leaders. So it was tough. And now we've come a long way. I mean, we've come a long way in that we have more, but at the same time, we have more and we have women's groups and women's associations and women's conferences. Are a lot of our rights are being pulled back, right? We know about that, whether it's abortion or whatever it is. And so we need to be on the front lines fighting it every step of the way, because it's, of course, unacceptable. And, you know, then, of course, I know, you know, what we're going to talk about later is fair pay, but obviously we've got to make sure we address that issue too. But yes, I did get backlash and resistance from men. I mean, and I, you know, I think we have to speak up. We have to be strong, stand up for ourselves. I had to do it in a bunch of ways. Sometimes it relates to getting to speak up, getting a place at the table, our rights, our pay. But absolutely, we have to be strong and not be overtaken and not be intimidated by men.
So I got to ask Liz. So especially you mentioned with your business partner and co-founder was a male, and there's you, and they think you're the assistant and all that crazy stuff. How did you? What is one way? We've only got a couple minutes here before we hit a break. But what's one way that you sort of overcame that? Like, did you have to be more assertive, or did you have to sort of balance that? Like you mentioned before, a lot of times when women are too assertive, it's like, oh my gosh, she's difficult, she's challenging. How did you balance that out to get your seat at the table?
Yeah, and what I did is I really tried to make everything about results, like make it very clear what my goals and what the company's goals were, what our leaders' goals were, what our employees' goals were. I thought we all needed to be very clear on our goals and then make it about results. And if we did, then everything couldn't be so subjective. You know, like, boy, when he does it, it makes sense and he's strong. And when she does it, it's not acceptable. If she's getting the results and he's not, then that's all that matters. You know, so I think that was a key part of it for me. And still is to this day. And I'm such a believer in that, like making sure you're clear what your goals are and then, you know, judging people and rewarding people and promoting people based on their results, not on the hours they work, not on, are they playing the game and going out to the bars late at night, but are they getting the results?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's key. I mean, so I worked at JP Morgan for we don't have to be too specific, Liz. You can see the gray hair. Let's just call it 20 plus years, okay? And I will tell you, I was very impressed that they were. I left there in 2015, so the last 10 years I was there, they were doing a lot even back then, pushing the not pushing, but promoting the women's agenda, and not only women but other people of color and things like that. And being very progressive about it and being very thoughtful when we would go through our year-end reviews and we would review people and things like that. And so I was very impressed. And now you look at it. So, I still have a bunch of friends who work there, and the board at JP Morgan for a Wall Street thing, but especially a firm, is very diverse, comparatively speaking. Very good stuff. We got to hit a break here. I'm rambling. We got to hit a break here. We're going to come back after the break. We're going to talk more about closing that gender pay gap.
How would you like to have direct access to Mr. Biz to help you run your business more profitably and more efficiently? At MrBizSolutions.com, you get live access to not only Mr. Biz, but also several of his hand-picked and trusted business experts, each with 20-plus years of experience to help you optimally manage and grow your business. That's just the start of where Mr. Biz Solutions begins. Learn more at MrBizSolutions.com. That's MrBizSolutions.com.
Attention, Mr. Biz Nation. We have an exclusive offer just for you. Get lifetime access to scarcity countdown timers and logic links for only $69. Yes, you heard it right, only $69. These tools will add urgency to your email campaigns and website pages, helping you increase conversions, sales, and capture more leads. Don't miss this incredible opportunity. Visit GetPulseTools.com now and take your business to new heights.
Check out all three of Mr. Biz's best-selling books at MrBizBooks.com. Now, once again, here's Mr. Biz.
All right, welcome back to the show. We're talking again this week with Liz Elting. You can find Liz at, first of all, our website, LizElting.com. We'll put all this in the show notes as well. You can follow her on Instagram, on X, formerly Twitter, LinkedIn and Facebook. So Liz, I've been waiting to jump into this, but let's talk about the gorilla in the room, the elephant in the room of this gender pay gap. So first of all, how much has it gotten better, right, in the last, I don't know, let's say 10 to 15 years, maybe 20 years? And what are some things, I guess, more practically that we can think of, especially for the business owners that are, you know, listeners or viewers of the show, to really think about, consciously thinking about and helping close that gap?
Yes, absolutely. And it has gotten better. And each year, women get paid, and the exact number right now, I know it's just creeping up little by little, but we're closer than we ever were to where men are. But I still think we're something only like, you know, low 80s on the dollar, 84 cents on the dollar, something like that. So not nearly enough. So that's an issue and we need to address it. And, you know, one way is, and I'm thinking about what you just said about JP Morgan. I am very impressed with what JP Morgan's done, because I do know as they're looking at their leadership and they keep working on their most senior leadership, I know they have a few top women in line for the most senior positions, right? The C-level positions, the CEO positions in line. And I think that's fabulous, because I think that's a key part of what needs to be done, right? When we have women at the highest level, in the C-level positions, in the CEO position, on the board, and at least 50% women on the board, we are much more likely to get there. And that will be the key to getting there. And we will get there faster. Of course, we also need to bring in more women, and then we need to keep them and make sure we find ways to keep them with everything, you know, from the right, making sure we make it so they can speak up if there's a problem, make sure we have the right family leave policies and all of that. Okay, so I think those are some of the ways. I mean, as far as on an individual basis and what women can do, I think it's very important when they come into a job, they negotiate to get the fair pay. And we've seen stats that men are much more likely to negotiate and women are much more are likely to take what they can get. And so, of course, in certain companies, you're only going to get what you ask for. I mean, some, maybe they keep it uniform across the board and they have rules on that, but not all. And so it's very important to negotiate when you come into a job. And then the same goes with asking for raises, right? I mean, men are more likely to do it than women. And as a result, men end up making more because of that. And women need to not be afraid to ask. And it's like anything in life. It's not what you say, but it's how you say it. If you do it nicely, respectfully, and you back it up with results, then you're very likely to get what you deserve. And I think it's so important for women to do that, for all of us to do that. I mean, I had issues at my own company where I felt like I wasn't fairly treated because I was a woman. And I had to fight for all kinds of things, even at my own company, whether it was related to pay or making sure my voice was heard or my voice was listened to. And, you know, I mean, even in my very dramatic exit of my own company, and I did have a dramatic exit, which is another story for another day, but I had people saying, oh, Liz, just take what you can get, or just be in that figurehead role. And, you know, don't ask for too much. You're lucky. You have a great situation. And I thought, no, what's fair is fair. And it's the same. And so I was going to fight till the end to get what, you know, I deserved for what, you know, my situation. And that goes back to women. in whether they're entry level and they're getting the job offer, whether they're rising and they should be asking for a raise. Don't settle. Don't let yourself be pushed around just because we tend to be warm and friendly and we want to be liked. We can do all those things while still asking for and fighting for what we deserve. I think that is so critical for all of us.
Yeah, I love what you said about really the starting point, right?
Yes.
Is when you're accepting that job, don't be afraid to ask for what the value of the position and the value you're bringing to that firm or that company. Don't be afraid to ask for that. And I think you're right. I mean, you know, I've managed tons and tons of people over the years as well. And, you know, some of the stereotypes that you had mentioned even about women, I think are true. And men are much more aggressive about compensation and things like that. Whereas I think women, a lot of times it's unfortunate that they don't want to rock the boat, or they want to be nice, and you know, if you come into a situation and you're starting off below where you should be, you're already behind the eight ball, right? So you're already trying to catch up, which makes it that much more difficult, because over the years, that gap is probably just going to widen, and it's going to make it much more difficult for a woman to ever get to the point where she should be and have sort of an equal compensation compared to someone, a male, that's contributing the same amount as her.
That's exactly right. And that is why women are in this situation, because they don't ask for as much at the get-go. And so exactly, that's why that is so critical, that starting off point. And these women have to think to themselves, I don't want to be financially dependent on anyone but myself, and not thinking I'll rely on a man, because that will cause problems in your own life later on. If you realize you can't take care of yourself, right? We've seen it in marriages where there's inequity because the woman doesn't make as much. So it's not going to be helpful to your home life as well. So it's critical. It's critical to know what you're worth from the beginning. And even though sometimes we all feel imposter syndrome, right? We just have to say, okay, I may feel that way, but I know what results I've delivered in my life, and I know what I can do. And this is what I'm going to speak about, and I'm going to get what I am worth. And even if it's a little scary, like anything we do, most of the important things we do are scary, right? But you do it anyway. And then, you know, you realize, thank goodness I did.
Yeah. I love what you said about the focusing on results, and even in your own story of how that's how you really overcame some of these inequities, the sexism and things like that. I think that's so important. And I know as a leader, when someone would come to me when I was at JP Morgan and say, I need to get paid more and it would be, I don't say nefarious reasons, but not non-result oriented things. Like, well,
yes,
because so-and-so got a bigger raise than me, or don't worry about so-and-so. Tell me what you bring to the table. What value do you bring? I don't care about anyone else. This is a you conversation. How valuable are you to the team, to the firm? And that's what you should get compensated on. It shouldn't be because someone else is getting paid or whatever necessarily. And if you do that, I think men and women and people of all color and all this, all rate everything, right? If you do that and you focus on that, I think it's a, you know, utopian world, I think, to think that. But I think that eliminates a lot of these problems, right? Because everyone gets
paid.
They get paid based on their results.
That's right. And then it shows you're results oriented, you delivered. And then when they put you in that next role, you're going to be, again, about your results and the people you're supervising results, their results. And that's what it's all about in the end, right? I mean, it's not about, you know, who's buddies with who. It's not like that. So yes, I think that is absolutely critical. Letting them know how you've grown the company, how you've made it more profitable, how you've introduced ideas that have been wonderful for the bottom line and the culture. So absolutely.
Liz, I had a male come to me. We're running out of time here, but he came to me and told me that he needed a larger than usual raise because he had had another child and he was getting a pool put in. So he needed to get a bigger bonus thing. It's crazy. Again, we've been talking this week with Liz Elting, LizElting.com. You can follow her on Instagram, X, LinkedIn, Facebook. Liz, thanks so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much to you, Ken. I loved speaking with you. This was fabulous.
Awesome. Appreciate it. Guys, have a fantastic rest of your week. Don't forget, as always, cash flow is king.
To become part of Mr. Biz Nation, follow him on all social media platforms or never miss a show by going to MrBizRadio.com. If you prefer free video content, visit the Mr. Biz YouTube channel or check out his streaming channel, which is available on 100-plus streaming platforms at MrBizNetwork.com.